Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. Culver City is ringing in the changes in 2018.
What David and I see in LA was always all this amazing creativity, but it would be a restaurant here, and then you'd get in your car and go to a coffee shop there, and then go to a great store over here, driving from place to place. We wanted to really bring all of those great creative things together in one place.
Coming up later, tech and entertainment companies and a new flavor of mall in Culver City. We'll start today, however, with a goodbye to the architect and developer John Portman, who died this past Friday at age 93. Angelenos will know him best as the architect of the iconic Westin Bonaventure Hotel, completed in 1976 in downtown. Portman was based in Atlanta, where he designed the gleaming hotels and office buildings in the Peachtree Center District. Cindy Olnick of the LA Conservancy grew up in Georgia.
Long before I realized I was passionate about architecture, my dad would take me up to Atlanta on occasion, and I thought the Peachtree Plaza was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen in my life. And it was such a huge experience, such a huge deal to ride up that external elevator. You know, you just felt like you were flying, and I just had never seen anything like it in my whole life.
You can get the same thrill riding the external elevators of the Bonaventure Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Here's Ken Bernstein. He's manager of the City of LA's Office of Historic Resources, and he's principal city planner.
This is one of the buildings that certainly defines Los Angeles of the 1970s. It is iconic, I think, without doubt. I grew up in Los Angeles. I was a child of the 70s in many ways, and grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and didn't get downtown all that often, but this was notable architecture. It was so space age in its nature, and something that really, in a way, in my own mind, kind of began to define downtown Los Angeles as a new high-rise center. So I remember demanding that my father drive us downtown so we could experience this building in the 1970s. Interestingly enough, you know, experiencing this as a parent years later, as an architecture geek and planning nerd, I would take my kids into downtown LA and want to show them Broadway and the Central Library. But the building that really stuck out for them was always the Bonaventure, in part because they would demand to ride the glass-enclosed elevators on the exterior, which is a free thrill ride in downtown L.A. with expansive views of downtown in every direction. That was great fun for them growing up.
And the Bonaventure had that kind of space-age equality itself, and then it was plugged into an area that was also playing with ideas about future city living with elevated walkways and so on. It was part of a whole redevelopment of Bunker Hill that has certainly borne some criticism. But
it has. And, you know, the vision of downtown L.A. from that time period is not the vision that planners and policymakers are expounding today. And it was certainly a fortress-like design. It does not interact well with the street. There are blank walls for tremendous expanses along all of its sides for the most part. And it is accessed. It's hard to find your way into that building from the street in many directions. It's hard to find your way out once you are inside the hotel from many directions. You have a sense of disorientation in many ways. And it was connected with these elevated pedways, which were the cutting edge planning vision of that time through the Community Redevelopment Agency. But it was not the finer grained, pedestrian oriented, lively street type of vision that planners today would advocate for downtown L.A. It was a very different time.
That's Ken Bernstein, manager of the City of L.A.'s Office of Historic Resources. With its four cylinders of shiny glass and a soaring atrium with a flying glass elevator, the Bonaventure's futuristic look has made it a star of many a movie.
Where are you going?
Downtown. Bonaventure Hotel.
Come on, get in. I know a shortcut.
Excuse me. I need to get to the Bonaventure Hotel.
Bonaventure?
Yeah. You know where that is?
Yeah. See it from here.
Lojack got a hit on the truck. It's downtown at the Bonaventure Hotel.
That's from a video essay by Colin Marshall. Craig Hodgetts is an architect who's focused a lot on futuristic portrayals of Los Angeles.
This is really a turning point in a way. It's kind of the end of a visionary's view of architecture's role in the city. And I was surprised when I started thinking about this that there was this kind of conjunction of times with motion pictures. In a way, Peachtree Center was the progenitor for things like Logan's Run. Logan's Run, if you just squint your eyes, actually looks like the atrium in Peachtree Center. And so there's this genealogy, you'd have to say, that stretches from the LAX theme building in a futuristic sort of vision of the city towards then Peachtree Center and finally the Bonaventure. And it couldn't be further away from the Blade Runner futurism, which is, of course, there's a kind of dystopian one, which is far more au courant and has much more to do with our own more bleak view of the future. So for me, he must have been inspired by movies like Destination Moon, by the first flight of the Apollo and Yuri Gagarin way back in 1961, and, you know, feeling like he was at the cusp of this wave of the future becoming real. And I could just imagine him swashbuckling his way into the future.
So you think John Portman was inspired as much by pop culture or as much by what was going on in technology and the space race as he was by architecture?
Oh, I think far more, because I don't think there was really a precedent for what he was doing architecturally. The cantilevered balconies, the kind of endless vertigo-inspired kind of spaces, it just seems to me that he was often the popular science futuristic realm. And, you know, a building like that in his career was maybe 10 years in the making before it actually occurred in reality. So there's this incredible coincidence of this sort of forward thrust in technology and architecture, et cetera. And he really, I guess, I would say he was at the top.
And he became a developer in order to realize some of these visions.
Yes, and that's actually very the most remarkable thing, because his vision was so far ahead and, you know, outside of the box that I think he would have not been able to accomplish those buildings if not for being his own developer. Yeah, I would agree.
That was Craig Hodgetts, remembering the late architect and developer, John Portman. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Coming up, big changes in Culver City for filmmaking and for retail.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton, and now let's go to Culver City.
Culver City, rolling down Culver Boulevard. Happy hours all day, we go hard. Heart of the Streamland, Los Angeles. We the Culver crew, so don't f*** us.
That's comedian Alex Farnham. And yes, little Culver City, population almost 40,000, is ringing in some big changes. In a moment, we'll go shopping in an Expo Line adjacent complex that says, no, the California Mall is not dead, but it does have to change. It's a destination that will likely attract the growing new workforce in Culver City because a new generation of film and television titans is moving into the town that was once the hub of movie magic. But a longtime resident's ready for their close-up. KCRW's Jenny Hamill has the story.
When developer Harry Culver founded Culver City back in 1917, he advertised it as the heart of Screenland. A century later, the new generation of film and TV studios is streaming in.
Every city in America, if you've been watching the news, has been looking to land Amazon, and we've done it right here in Culver City.
That's Michael Hackman, CEO of Hackman Capital Partners, which owns Culver Studios. He announced back in October that Amazon Studios, the retail giant's film and TV production arm, was moving its headquarters from Santa Monica to Culver Studios. Meanwhile, HBO will build its new Los Angeles headquarters in town. Apple could be expanding its footprint here, too. And a slew of virtual reality companies have already set up shop.
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers.
You might argue that Culver City hasn't been this hopping since 1939, when two of Hollywood's most iconic movies were released on the big screen. And both were made in town. The Wizard of Oz was filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, now Sony Pictures Studios. And Gone with the Wind was filmed less than a mile away at Culver Studios. City founder Harry Culver even built a hotel shaped like a flat iron for Hollywood royalty when they rolled into town. Clark Gable stayed there, as did Greta Garbo. And the little people who played the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz stayed there during shooting. Lore has it they slept three to a bed, if they ever slept at all. The partying was legendary. But in the years following, the hotel, like the downtown around it, became kind of sleepy. Maya Malik marvels at the renaissance happening now. She bought the Culver Hotel with her family 10 years ago.
I came across the Culver Hotel and just kind of fell in love with the property. It was just more of a gut feeling that this is a pretty cool place.
Malik spent the last decade renovating, and today the hotel is part of Culver City's bustling downtown.
So to see it come all the way to where it is now in such a short period is quite incredible.
And the hotel's neighbor, Culver Studios, is celebrating its centennial this year with new tenants. Amazon Studios just started moving all 700 of its employees into the historic Gone with the Wind mansion and bungalows on the lot. Owner Michael Hackman says it's a perfect union of old and new Hollywood.
We've had David O. Selznick, you've had Orson Welles, you've had Steven Spielberg work here. I mean, and so now Amazon Studios is setting their own standards and blazing a new path.
Hackman says a big draw for Amazon was the major expansion happening on the 14-acre lot. A renovation, Hackman says, is needed to keep a 100-year-old studio viable as technology evolves. A big component of the studio's innovation plan is to tear down a handful of the 13 sound stages to make way for new office buildings with an open campus layout.
That would be attractive to companies that not only produce content within stages, but were able to consolidate a lot of the technology into creative office space where people work on computers more than they ever have before.
The construction will likely start in mid-2018, pending city council approval, which is expected later next week. Just half a mile away to the east, that's where the King of the North and the Mother of Dragons will eventually move in. Yes, I mean HBO's new Los Angeles headquarters. HBO will lease a four-story glass building that will replace what was Surface, the longtime kitchen supply store. It will sit just across the street from the Expo Line's Culver City stop. Here's Culver City Vice Mayor Thomas Small.
HBO really got one of the plum locations in the city. And it was a big process. Actually, the Arts District neighborhood did a great job of working with HBO to make sure that that's what they wanted in their neighborhood.
As for Apple, its Beats by Dre campus is already in Culver City, in the warehouse district called the Hayden Tract. Now Apple is said to be shopping around for office space in town for its new original programming division, looking to compete with streaming giants Amazon and Netflix. Michael Hackman says the biggest draw for Culver City is its location between downtown Los Angeles and Santa Monica. It's also on the Expo Line, and Vice Mayor Small says the Metro's role in the city's boom has been
essential and crucial. That's kind of what makes everything else happen. Being able to take the Metro makes it possible for us to begin to move past a cars-only culture, and it's already more successful than it was planned.
Over $1 billion in development projects are planned along the Expo Line in Culver City. The centerpiece is a $300 million, 500,000-square-foot project that will sit near the elevated Metro tracks. It's called Ivy Station Complex. Stephen Ehrlich and his firm Ehrlich, Yanai, Ree, and Cheney is one of the architecture firms behind this huge mixed-use project that will have apartments, a hotel, shops, office space, and underground parking.
And it's all interwoven and glued together by a public open space park. It portends to the LA's future of higher density environments, including living, working, playing, near multimodal transportation, including the Metro Rail.
This project is an example of the transit-oriented development planners region-wide believe is essential for Los Angeles if it's going to get off its car dependency and provide more housing. But will it be housing regular people can afford? The multifamily mixed-use complex across the street from the Culver City Metro stop currently rents a 3-bedroom townhome for $6,000 a month. Vice Mayor Small says city leaders need to find a balance.
We want to maintain the traditional charm that Culver City has and that diversity. We want our teachers to be able to live here. We would like our firefighters to be able to live here.
Culver City's renaissance has many people excited. It means more jobs, more money being poured into the local businesses and into public projects. But there's no denying that all this growth and change has some residents nervous that this once quiet town will become more crowded and more expensive. They worry about displacement. The median home price in Culver City is just over $800,000, but real estate values spiked 27% just in the last year alone.
And so we're going to have some more density. We're going to have more places for people to live. So if we can create a situation where we can live together side by side here, in the diversity of class and race and everything else, that's the goal.
Small says building more affordable housing and providing alternative transportation and ride-sharing options will be central as the city starts drafting its next general plan, its framework for the next 2 to 3 decades. For now, Small and other city leaders point to another project downtown that's under construction that they see as a place that will bring current and new residents and tech and entertainment workers together. It's located between the Culver Hotel and Culver Studios. Stephen Ehrlich and his firm are the lead architects behind what is intended to be the new centerpiece of downtown.
The Culver Steps are a new architectural concept because it goes up the steps and creates a new public plaza that's raised up above the first floor. So it'll be a whole new experience. It'll be fabulous to be up there looking out, catching sunsets in a new way.
Shops, restaurants, and offices will wrap around the steps in Public Plaza, which will face the 100-year-old studio that helped shape the city when it was founded and is doing so again. From the heart of Screenland, Jenny Hamill, reporting for DNA.
I'm Frances Anderton, and you're listening to DNA. So you just heard about the Ivy Station complex at the intersections of Venice, Washington, and National Boulevards, just adjacent to the Metro Expo Line. Well, now let's cross over Washington and go under the Expo Line and meet two Culver City developers who represent the changes taking place here.
We are at Platform, which is a old 1960s car dealership that Joey and I purchased in 2010 and have spent the last 7 years redeveloping and creating what today is kind of this really fun collection of unique stores and restaurants and designers from all over the world that we've brought to the Hayden Track neighborhood of LA.
This is David Fishbein. He and his business partner Joseph Miller form the Runyon Group, and that is a development company that is betting on the future of brick and mortar retail, albeit in a variant on the old mall model. And on the site of an old-style business. The car dealership was once owned by Miller's family. Platform is a bite-sized mall at 4 acres. It's aimed at train riders as much as drivers. It is not anchored by a Macy's or a Nordstrom's or another traditional department store. Rather, it is a complex of retrofitted and new buildings containing a careful selection of boutiques like Shades of Grey Clothing, Rabbit Ladders Children's Store and Tom Dixon, along with fancy eateries, deluxe coffee and a Soul Cycle. Fishbein and Miller keep the mix changing with pop-ups and street fairs, and they draw people to hang out in outdoor spaces amidst luscious greenery by design firm Elysian Landscapes. Here's Joey Miller.
I grew up here, and I love it here. This is home, and the place that's always been home to me. And what David and I see in L.A. was always all this amazing creativity, but it would be a restaurant here, and then you'd get in your car and go to a coffee shop there, and then go to a great store over here, driving from place to place. We wanted to really bring all of those great creative things together in one place.
What's happened in malls like internationally is it's, you know, all the stores have really become commoditized, and the inventory you can find very easily accessible online. It's the same stores that you're seeing in every city you're going to around the country, and so there really isn't a reason as much anymore to make an effort to go to the malls because you can just pop on your computer and find the same merchandise. And the idea was at Platform not only to have a lot of stores that had unique exclusive content and product that you could only find here, but to create an atmosphere and environment that was so unique and distinctive that you really wanted to come spend time here, even if you weren't necessarily coming to come shopping.
So you weren't deterred by the fact that retail, the traditional retail on the high street, was in decline when you got started?
It was interesting because when we got started, high street retail wasn't in decline. It was still very much in full force, and it was what, you know, major land.
There's the expo line.
It's really what major developers were investing in. They were getting away from malls, and they were investing in what, you know, we consider high streets like Melrose and Abbott Kinney and, you know, Soho in New York City, etc. And so when we were first starting Platform, we were honestly, when we were looking at tenants, we were competing with what was happening in other neighborhoods in the city. And you know, Venice was, you know, 7 years ago, still considered up and coming and was the place where a lot of these indie brands wanted to come. And now it's interesting 7 years later that we open, and a lot of these cooler independent tenants that were only looking at Venice before now feel like Venice is too commercial and too, you know, overexposed, and now they've gravitated back to like what our vision was in the beginning for what Platform is. And so it's become kind of this full circle that we've seen evolve.
At what point do you become overexposed?
As I said, I'm 34 and David's 31, and I have a recurring nightmare that like we're 40 and we're washed up and the whole moment's passed us by. So that's a bit of a joke, but the only way to not become overexposed, to become overdone, is to continue to only bring in interesting things that we really believe in.
You're listening to DNA, and I'm talking with Joseph Miller and David Fishbein. They are co-founders of the Runyon Group Development Company, and they're talking about their Culver City retail complex called Platform. They have just started construction on a much larger complex that will continue Platform just west. They were also creative consultants and leasing agents at the new Row DTLA on the site of the one-time LA terminal market. So what drew this pair to development? David Fishbein says for him, it was both the art and the business.
My mom, you know, was a artist that had her own kind of lifestyle brand and company and designed everything from bedding to clothing to home accessories and decor. So I was used to going into every store from the age of like 4, like having this hypercritical eye of like how things were merchandised and like what the color palette was and how things were, you know, all properly arranged. And then on my dad's side, I, you know, he was a developer and broker, and, you know, kind of grew up with kind of that finance business. So I always knew that I wanted to do something that kind of combined this really creative, you know, artistic side of things, and then also kind of the real estate side of things.
What's your story, Joey?
That's complicated. I grew up about 5 minutes from Platform, actually, and my family was in the car business. I don't know what I learned from that, but I went to school. I thought I wanted to be a politician. I learned quickly I didn't want to do that, and I came back and saw the Avalon Hotel in Beverly Hills, which was one of the like the first cool boutique hotels in LA. And I wanted to find out who built it, and it turns out it was a guy called Brad Corzine, who's still in the development business. And I basically wouldn't leave his company alone until they gave me a job. Took a job for a year and a half there, learned what I could. I was 23, so I figured I knew everything. And I went off to start my own development company. So built something in town across from Sony Studios, was the first building that I did. And then I wised up the day I met David. And he and I had breakfast, and he described what our company would be. And that's pretty much exactly what we are now. It's actually called Runyon because when I was leaving the big company that I was at with Brad, I said, you know, what are all these big shot finance people call their companies after natural landmarks like Nichols Canyon Partners and Brentwood Canyon Partners? I said, I was hiking Runyon all the time. You know, that's more where younger folks would go. So I said, I'll just call it Runyon. And when David and I got together, we were going to change the name. There goes the expo line again. But what we decided was it was sort of just weird enough where no one would really know what it did, which we liked. And it was an LA landmark. So we kept it, and here we are today.
Now, Joey, you're obviously very conscious of youth and scared of age and aging. And earlier, David referred to your original concept of your target customer that has evolved. Who was your target customer?
We actually, Joey and I basically put together like 13 different like psychographic imaginary profiles that we basically came up with in our head of like who we envisioned to be the platform customer. And I remember our profiles ranged from, you know, targeting, you know, people that were living in the neighborhood and why would, you know, people who work down the street in the Hayden Tract want to come here on a daily basis, whether it was for, you know, a great salad at Sweetgreen or, you know, incredible taco at Low Key, or whether it was one of the parents at the private schools around here that was coming in, dropping their kids off in the morning and going to a SoulCycle class after. And then also like thinking about like how we expand our trade area beyond the neighborhood. So, you know, the cultural tourist was an interesting thing for us. And how do we make platform that place that when people are visiting us internationally, like that's the place in LA that you are hearing about and wanting to see.
So to people who are feeling the doldrums, slightly in the doldrums about where retail is going, what would you say to them? What would you say the lessons?
the retailers themselves?
Yeah, well, no, I suppose more the managers of malls, you know.
I wouldn't.
I mean, I
wouldn't have a lot of inspirational things for those folks. I think that retail all over the world, but in this country in particular, just like a lot of things, there's just too much of it, and it's all the same. So, you know, great retail, people still love discovery. People still like expressing themselves through the things that they wear and the things that they have in their house and the food that they eat and the, you know, places that they get their nails done. This is still like a basic, commerce and gathering is a basic human thing that people want to do all the time. The big difference is that people have options now. And if going into a store is not compelling and interesting, they could just do it online very easily, whereas before they had to go in the store. So uniqueness and experience are the two important things now.
You heard from Joseph Miller and David Fishbein, developers of Platform in Culver City. I'm Frances Anderton, and that's it for today's DNA. Avishai Artsy is the show's producer.
JC Swatek mixed this episode.
Thank you very much for listening.